Around 2 a.m. on Sunday, July 12th, 1925, two men knocked on an apartment door at 34 East Oak Street in the near north section of Chicago. One was a city detective, the other a newspaper reporter. Despite the lack of a search warrant, they entered. The officer seized property and written material. Then he arrested the 32-year-old occupant, an Army veteran and postal worker named Henry Gerber. What was Gerber's crime? What warranted this stealthy approach, one assuring the story would immediately make the papers? Henry Gerber was born Joseph Henry Dittmar on a late June 1892 day in Bavaria. Accompanied by family members, he entered the U.S. as a young man through Ellis Island, finding his way then to Chicago. 4 years later, he would be briefly committed to a mental hospital because, you see, Henry Gerber was identified as a homosexual. Interned as a German alien enemy during World War I, upon his release, ironically, he served with the U.S. Army of Occupation in Germany from 1920 to 1923. While there, Henry Gerber read German gay literature and learned about the German homosexual emancipation movement. He met Magnus Hirschfeld, a German physician and defender of gay rights who was working to repeal the law that criminalized homosexuality. Gerber came back inspired, returning in 1924 to Chicago with its emerging gay subculture. He was hired by the post office. He then began to work to establish an organization to advocate for gay rights. With a few others, on December 10th, 1924, 94 years ago this past week, Gerber submitted the charter for the Society for Human Rights. It was the first gay rights organization in the United States. They began publishing a newsletter called Friendship and Freedom. However, gay readers were afraid to subscribe because at that time, Chicago's postal censors were cooperating with the police to help identify anyone who was receiving homosexual literature so they could be punished as a sexual deviant. The society never attracted more than a few members. After a short time, it ended abruptly. The wife of one of the co-founders reported her bisexual husband to a social worker who then contacted the police. Early on that July 1925 Sunday, Gerber and several others were arrested and prosecuted for deviancy. Years later, Gerber would recall the experience. At the police station, I was locked up in a cell, but no charges were made against me. A friendly cop at the station showed me a copy of the Examiner. There, right on the front page, I found this incredible story, Strange Sex Cult Exposed. Gerber went through three costly trials. He lost his entire life savings. He was fired from his job for conduct unbecoming a postal worker. His case was finally dismissed only because of the officer's failure to obtain a search warrant. None of his documents were ever returned. He was bankrupt. He was jobless. There would not be another gay rights organization in Chicago for 30 years. Gerber's humiliating experience had a long precedent in our nation. Since colonial times, members of the LGBTQ community were certainly not accorded liberty or the pursuit of happiness, and were on occasion denied their very lives. Early colonial accounts from Virginia and from Massachusetts record those caught engaging in same-sex relationships receiving punishments from public whipping to death. Massachusetts had a law on its books against cross-dressing from the late 17th century. After declaring and winning independence, the young nation didn't follow the Enlightenment lead in decriminalizing personal sexual behavior. Instead, for more than two centuries, the United States continued to make homosexuality a social aberration and a punishable offense. Eventually, science would team up with religion. The former calling homosexuality a mental disorder, the latter an abominable sin. Young Henry Gerber had immigrated to a nation posing serious threats to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness just for the crime of being who he was. As the first gay rights organization came crashing to the ground, there was, less than a century ago, no reason to believe this reality would ever change. What could possibly make anyone think that this homophobic, transphobic, heterocentric nation could ever be transformed? Some believed nonetheless. These kept pushing, fighting, marching, singing, dancing. They kept demanding, insisting, creating upheaval, creating discomfort. They kept advocating. They kept working in and out of the political process. They kept praying, and they kept believing. My friends, in the recent midterm elections, 161 people who identify as LGBTQ were elected to office. Just how cynical and historically mistaken would you have to be to claim nothing ever changes? The fight, and it has been a fight. The fight some of us have been in for decades has created remarkable change. Change. It has happened. It can happen. That great heroine of the Catholic worker movement, Dorothy Day, admitted, some people say, what is the sense of our small effort? What is the sense of our small effort? Our taking time deliberately, carefully to listen and to learn. What does it matter? Oh, Dorothy Day responds, some cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. Transformation is slow. Transformation is painfully slow. Transformation is the journey of one step after another. Transformation is built up brick by brick by brick. But it is possible. It is possible. Now, I'm not naive. I don't believe that change is necessarily permanent. The threats remain real, the humiliation, the hate, they remain real. We cannot rest. History teaches hard lessons. Freedoms won can be lost again. The rolling down river of justice can diminish to a trickle and evaporate altogether in the scorching heat of injustice. Closet doors of all kinds must be unhinged, taken down, turned into scrap, or better yet, made into tables at which all can gather to eat, lest these doors become again barriers, impediments, the skeletal framework. The skeletal framework of court victories and civic accomplishments must be enfleshed in hearts and in hands and in voices, where love and not legalities becomes our guide. We cannot rest. And along this way, we must celebrate. We must notice and appreciate and acclaim, and we must revel. We must revel in change. Real change. By all accounts, the initial gay rights organization in the U.S. was a complete failure. Short-lived, with a shame-filled conclusion. It didn't seem to make any difference at all. However, now, with the benefit of decades of perspective, Henry Gerber's home in Chicago is on the National Historic Registry. Henry Gerber is acclaimed as an early hero in the struggle for LGBTQ justice. He lived long enough to learn about New York's Stonewall Uprising. All of us with a personal stake in LGBTQ justice stand on the unlikely shoulders of Henry Gerber. Today is a day to celebrate, to use awareness of change to refortify and reinvigorate us. Today's a day to remember with immense gratitude the courage of those who led us in this struggle. In the words of Michael Adams, you'll find them on the cover of your order, we stand on the shoulders of our elders, elders like Henry Gerber, and we lock arms with them, we lock arms with them to face the future. We refuse to be quiet. We refuse to be quiet. Read these words with me. They're on the cover of your order. It's the last sentence. We refuse to be quiet. We refuse to let hatred win. And we refuse to be invisible. Take heart. Take courage. Take one more step. And one more step. And one more step.